morning, everyone. This is Dr. Campbell, Board Chair. I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order of the Arizona State Board of Podiatry Examiners, February the 14th, 2024 at 8 a.m. Since most we have in-person and we also have telephonic participation, so I'm going to go ahead and ask Heather to double-check on the roll call.
Yes, Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Dr. Foreman?
Here.
Dr. Ulano? Ms. Broman?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. All right, before we begin the other agenda items, I'd like to make an introduction to to the public and to my fellow board members. We have our new a public member, Vicki Broman, is with us today, so I would appreciate a good welcome, and we look forward to participation with us. It's nice to have a public member again. Also, we have a board member appreciation plaques here for Drs. Foreman and Ulano, so for your years of service and your term here on the board, so we'll figure out how to get those to you. Anyway, our fourth item here on the agenda is conflict of interest. Does anyone have any conflicts of interest to declare on any agenda item for this meeting? Okay, hearing none, we will move on. Since we're moving pretty quickly here, I'm just going to go ahead and we can do the minutes. Our first session of minutes is the general session from January 10, 2024. Does anyone have any additions or corrections for those minutes? Hearing none, I will make motion to accept the general session board meeting minutes of January 10, 2024 as written.
Seconded.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded to accept the general session minutes. And I will make a note that that Vicki Broman will abstain from the vote since she was not present at that meeting. So we will now take a vote. All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Next is the executive session board meeting minutes from January 10, 2024. Does anyone have any concerns, questions, or additions or corrections for those minutes? Hearing none, I'll make a motion to accept those executive session board meeting minutes as written for January 10, 2024.
Seconded.
Second, thank you. It's been moved and seconded to accept the executive session board meeting minutes of January 10, 2024. Well, now is there any discussion? Hearing none, we'll take our vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thank you very much. All right.
And Madam Chair, board members, if I may, Ms. Broman is abstaining from those minutes as well.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
All right. So we'll move on here to six, which is items for board review, discussion, possible action. We'll start with subheading A, which is our investigation files. And we have one file to review, which is complaint number 22-12-B, Dr. Spencer Neiman. Dr. Neiman is present telephonically as well as his counsel. And we have Dr. Daniel Saunders is the investigator on the case. And we will ask now for Dr. Saunders' report.
Okay, good morning. So this is an investigation regarding a malpractice claim that was started by the board just to review. Claim number 2212, B as in boy. And it should be noted, I think, that this claim was settled out of court for that case. The written response to Dr. Munin's attorney provided a good summary of the events. And it's denied that Dr. Neiman was practicing below the standard of care. Attorneys make an argument that additional procedures that were performed for this patient are not due to the care that Dr. Neiman provided. It's noted that expert witness testimony was reviewed, I guess, prior to settlement, but Dr. Steck provided also that Dr. Neiman upheld the standard of care performing the surgery. I'll summarize my medical review. Patient, initials JR, was a previous ex-military professional, and he got a medical discharge. And prior to seeing Dr. Neiman, he had four previous ankle surgeries for which he was medically discharged for, and diagnosis were ankle DJD and osteochondral injuries. And it should be noted at the point in review of the chart that the patient did have some obesity prior to the procedures being performed. The patient, JR, initially the whole time refused an ankle fusion procedures by the previous docs, by Dr. Neiman as well. The patient was initially seen in 2018, for which I guess the diagnosis also was confirming the DJD. And Dr. Neiman, two procedures were performed during this procedure, one in 2018, one in 2019. When I review medical records, the records are very limiting. There's continuous cut and pasting of the notes, and my overall summary was that there very new information was added to dates of service for individual encounters, including punctuation errors and exact duplicates were found. Physical examination of both the pre-op and post-operative new information was weak, and description of the progress was really infrequent, and it's difficult to monitor as a physician evaluating this. I make note in there that the same orthopedic evaluation examination, and I quoted there saying pain and swelling noted to the ankle and sinus tarsi joints, pain with range of motion, mild crepitus noted, limited range of motion noted. This was the same both pre-op and post-op. It's the same cut and paste. And, you know, when I review the plan, the post-operative plan, nothing is really documented very well. A second surgery was performed almost a year later, and it was very uncertain as to why. Notes were infrequent there. There was one new finding that was identified saying that there was pain noted to the lateral gutter, and that was the only change in physical findings throughout. It was continuous cut and paste. I did review preoperative and postoperative x-rays. There was, you know, it's obvious that there's ankle arthritis and subtalar joint arthritis. There was previous surgery with some previous fixation that was done prior. Reviewing the radiographs, you know, a total ankle replacement was performed. There is a discussion that was made whether or not this was performed appropriately. Going back and forth with expert witness, there was some concern that the subtalar joint was breached by this implant when Dr. Maney put it in. I reviewed the radiographs that were provided. You know, I did not feel like a breach of the subtalar joint was noted. I think there's a consensus that the implant was placed at an angle, but you know, I do not feel like the subtalar joint was penetrated. And I did not appreciate a loose body in the ankle gutter at any point at this time. The patient had one removed later. You know, in my opinion, by looking at the radiographs, I think this is a difficult ankle replacement. Had a high cavus foot, and there was a significant angulation identified to the talus, to the ankle joint itself. So there wasn't a lot of bone to work with, so it does come close to the subtalar joint, but I don't believe that it breached it, in my opinion. So yeah, dating back to dates of visit, dates of service, he was initially seen, this patient, back in 2018, and upon that visit, a total ankle joint replacement was discussed. The patient came back a few months later. It was an identical cut and paste notes. There's no new information that was done. 2 months later, it appeared to be a pre-op encounter for the patient. There was additional notes noted for review of systems, and the surgery was again reviewed. And then the patient itself had had the surgery done on 10/26, was followed up initial post-op on 10/30. This was as to the only new encounter that was done, the initial post-op. The patient was given a CAMBU post-operatively, given some education. That was after the surgical procedures that were performed for the first surgery. And then the patient is seen several times thereafter, mostly just for radiographs. Notes are copied and pasted. The third post-op visit, as noted, is that one that unique encounter that added painted lateral gutter. And at that point, there is a mention in the plan is to do a tightening up of the ligaments and clean up the lateral gutter, or clean up the gutter. An MRI was eventually ordered. That was for the right side. Patient was seen again. This is a month after that one new encounter for the pain to the gutter, and they discussed surgery again for a second surgery. Patient was kind of a few months later decided to I guess go for the surgery. They had a pre-op encounter done, which was identical to the previous pre-op encounter the month before, the visit before. Patient had that second surgery that was performed, and you know, patients seemed to be progressing well. The follow-up encounters really were cut and paste, and the additional x-rays that were performed. Patient did make it through physical therapy, and a few months after that was advised to go back to normal activities. There's no notes in the chart that really that the patient was having complications or problems. When I go through it, the one main question I came to when I'm looking at the operative reports, because otherwise they're standard operative reports, but there's no documentation as to who took out the hardware initially when they put in the total joint replacement. And you know, to this day, or at least to the radiographs that Dr. Newman provided, there's just a floating lateral buttress plate. And at some point, those screws need to be removed, at least to put in the total joint replacement. And there's no documentation in the operative report regarding that. So I'm not quite sure. I'm assuming Dr. Newman did it because there were radiographs that had the fixation in there prior to or his initial radiographs. That was one concern for me. I don't know if it affects the case, but it was lacking documentation again. Billing was consistent with the procedures that were performed. The cut and paste, one time it had a 214, one time it had a 213. It's the same note. But outside that, no real discrepancies there. When I review this case, you know, I believe the documentation makes it really hard and difficult to defend Dr. Neiman on this one. The documentation provided doesn't help with improvement or progress, and doesn't really justify the second procedure as was why it was done. I think those procedures that were performed on the second case are common for someone that undergoes a total joint replacement, sometimes done at the same time as the joint replacement. And it certainly is reasonable why it was done almost a year later, but it's just not documented in the chart there. So, you know, the documentation is difficult to review here. I did not appreciate a loose body on any of the radiographs. It didn't seem to be floating. It wasn't in the first operative report. But apparently Dr. Neiman, when he did the stabilization, did remove a loose body that was in there. I think there was a pathology report as well. And again, you know, one of the notes I put in my summary, it's documented on every visit that the patient had a steady gait during the normal walk cycles. That cut and paste that's in there, and it just kind of continues to say the same thing. Not that he's having problems ambulating. The only pre-op note was that one that he had pain in that lateral gutter that one time. You know, in reviewing the actual technical component of it, I think it's a difficult case. Just looking at the pre-op films, the patient had four procedures done. Probably would have been better for an ankle arthrodesis. He refused it, so we're limited as a physician. And I think the total joint replacement is reasonable to do. I think the joint was created in angulation, and you know, there's no mention as to rationale why it was done that way. These are done with the jig. There's a pre-op template that's done with the radiographs. So, you know, it may have been just how it formulated out. I don't necessarily blame Dr. Neiman for that. And I don't think that's the cause for the patient having further pain, in my opinion. I think Dr. Steck concurred as well. I think the plate being left in there just floating is a potential problem. And that's fine if there's documentation and rationale as to why that was done. Yes, it's a periosteal cover, it does adhere to the bone pretty well, but that can be jarred loose at any point, and may need, as I put in my note there, may need another procedure down the road because it's not reinforced.
Can I hear you say that? Can you say that last sentence again, please?
I was referring to the plate. The plate's left alone in there, and I think that has potential to cause some problems being left alone, and may require additional.
The plate?
The buttress plate that's left in the radiograph.
Dr. Neiman, you can. We will ask you for your participation when it's appropriate. So let Dr. Saunders finish, please.
This is a telephonic interview. I'm trying to hear it over a telephone, and I'm just asking him to repeat.
Okay, and make sure that you're in a quiet location, and anybody else on this call, please keep your phones muted so that it improves the hearing of all participants.
I couldn't hear to say plate or bone or whatever.
I am basically also just paraphrasing my report that you should have a copy of. But, there is a buttress plate that was left inside of the patient's ankle. There's no documentation or rationale as to why that is in there. And I have concerns going forward that could be potentially a problem for the patient. Maybe requiring a potential surgery for that to be removed at any point in the future. In regards to the permanent disability that it was noted during the malpractice, I think that the discharge from the military and the patient's multiple procedures that he had before Dr. Neiman actually became part of the case can account for that as well. I don't necessarily blame it on any of the surgeries that Dr. Neiman performed. And the patient did show some improvement during physical therapy as recommended by the therapist. So, that kind of discounts some of that permanent disability as well. And I can answer some questions.
Thank you, Dr. Saunders. You answered my question about the loose body. That was one of my main concerns. And I do also, as you have the concerns about the documentation. Here we have a patient who supposedly gets a gastric recession, but there's no documentation on the range of motion. What the values of the Aquinas are, et cetera, et cetera.
So. Yeah, I will say it's a very much common adjunctive procedure.
Of course. All right, so Dr. Yolano, do you have any questions for Dr. Saunders?
No, I have no questions for Dr. Saunders.
Thank you. Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions?
No, very complete report. My questions were answered in your report. Thank you.
Ms. Foreman, do you have any questions?
Thank you.
All right. So now we have, it's time now to hear from Dr. Neiman to give us his response, and then we are then able to ask Dr. Neiman questions. And sorry about the inability to hear Dr. Neiman. Sometimes the connections aren't real great, so we always ask everybody again to speak slowly, clearly, and anyone not speaking to keep your phones muted. Thank you. So please proceed, Dr. Neiman.
So this is a gentleman. I appreciate Dr. Saunders' report. I understand he does total ankles. I'm not sure at what quantity he does them. The hope and goal was to have this evaluated by someone who does total ankles on a consistent basis, as a lot of opinions can be made on total ankles for those who don't do them versus those who do them. This is a gentleman that I'd seen sporadically, and then finally he decided he wanted to get a replacement. The goal was to replace his ankle. We proceeded with that procedure, and he progressed really well. Again, understanding that he had multiple procedures prior, which were non-joint, sparing, or joint-sparing procedures, clean-outs, arthroscopies, and so forth. These procedures were done out of state, I believe. And as this patient progressed post-operatively, he progressed really well and continued to have a progression of relief of pain within the total ankle joint. As we consent patients, we don't agree to say 100% pain relief, but we do say that they will have a good relief in pain, not significant improvement in range of motion, but hopefully the range of motion is there. I think the end goal of total ankles is a good understanding of what the consent was. The consent was never for a complete relief of pain and or complete return to full.
Dr. Neiman, you cut out. We can't hear you now.
This is Heather in the board office. Can other participants hear me? Dr. Ulano, Dr. Foreman?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes, Heather, I can hear.
And is Ms. Barrett on the call?
Dr. Neiman, this is Dr. Campbell again. Are you still there? We've lost you.
Dr. Neiman, are you back on the call?
I just pulled back in. Can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you.
So if you want to go back to where you were, if you could never. I think you were talking about, just the procedure in general and.
So patient had the procedure, understanding the consent was for never 100% pain relief, never really full range of motion, but to significant improvement in pain as the patient decided not to return, as the patient did not want a total effusion. Patient went on and had a replacement and progressed well, as the physical therapy records show, as my records show. Mm-hmm. To the point of copying and pasting is very common in the medical world, and it's very scrutinized very often in the legal world. If the same exam is done at the same visit, right? I have templates in which they say the same thing, right? Or you can copy and paste the notes, right? As patient comes in, I'm evaluating for his incision. I'm evaluating for his x-rays. I'm evaluating the integrity and position of the ankle joints. As patient progressed just fine, progressed onto physical therapy, continued, but presented back with still pain and discomfort in the lateral gutter. Dr. Saunders made comment that he didn't see any justification for the second surgery, but then later explained why he had the second surgery. If you look at the gutter, if you look at the lateral gutter on the x-rays, you will see there's loose bodies and arthritic changes in the distal aspect of the lateral gutter on the fibula. It's clearly showing those bodies. Patient was having some impingement. If you're familiar with an ankle replacement, you're only resurfacing a good third of the talus and most of the tibial plafond, but not all the way down to the distal aspect of the cartilaginous surfaces of the fibula, as well as the lateral, as well as the lateral medial aspect of the fibula, of the talus. And so, again, we decided to go in, remove those little bodies in the talus, and of course, as you're invading the ankle ligaments, you got to tighten them up, okay? So that was the justification, the rationale for the second surgery. As patient progressed in the second surgery, he felt relief from the symptoms that he's having. So I think the documentation clearly shows the discomfort he was having, the justification for the second surgery, and the x-rays do show that, okay? As for the buttress plate that was left in there, okay? We leave plates in patients all day, every day, okay? He stated that the buttress plate was left in the ankle joint. It was not in the ankle joint. I believe it's on the lateral aspect of the fibula, okay? Clearly away from any other metallic surfaces of the ankle joints. I don't have them in front of me, But there's times where we go in and do the replacement and have to remove screws, okay? I use a CT-guided ankle replacement where I know going into what screws need to be removed. That doesn't mean we remove every screw. That doesn't mean we remove every plate. If I remove the plate, I'm making a whole nother incision, right, that I have to worry about healing as well, okay? So if I can get away with just removing a screw that's in the course or alignment of the ankle replacement, that's the safest manner and most appropriate way of proceeding, okay? And I've done and seen this multiple times. I've heard lectures on this multiple times, okay? What's adequate needs to come out, what's not doesn't need to come out. As you know, we leave in hardware all the time for patients. But again, the clear stating of that the buttress plate was in the ankle joint was not in the ankle joint, it was on the lateral axis of fibula. Patient then proceeded to spend his winters in Minnesota where he connected up with another orthopedic surgeon. Okay. It was very unfriendly to podiatry. Okay. Patient continued to have pain. Patient was unaware of this alignment issue. Alignment is definitely important with ankle replacements, but I don't believe his alignment affected his contour and motion of the ankle joints. At that point in time, as he proceeded to see an orthopedist in Minnesota, he underwent a revision of the ankle as well as a subtalar joint replacement or subtalar joint fusion, okay, which he continues to have pain from. So in the long run, I could offer him as much as I could. I feel my standard of care was appropriate. I feel I met the standard of care to the point of this patient felt that his pain was due to the misalignment of the talus, which I clearly do not feel was appropriate. I feel he went on to proceed with chronic surgeries, chronic pain, and I feel like a lot of this was connected to his goals and disabilities with the VA because he was service connected with for the ankle. I did mention the cut and paste. I feel like I clarified the reason for the second surgery. The buttress plate, I think, was the concern. I think in the long run, Dr. Steck is, you know, well respected as an expert witness when it comes to total ankles. I trained under him. I've seen many ankles in this community. I do these consistently. I do these frequently. I feel like I'm very good at them. And I feel like I confidently provided this patient with the utmost care. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Dr. Iguilano, do you have any questions for Dr. Neiman?
Yeah, Dr. Neiman, I have a question in regards to the operative port. It was kind of sparse in regards to the removal of the screws. I feel that should have been included and dictated into the report.
Who was asking? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear who was asking.
Dr. Iguilano.
Is this a question or a statement?
Statement.
Okay.
Thank you. Anything else?
Understood.
Okay. Anything else, Dr. Iguilano?
No, not at this time.
Thank you.
I just wanted to state that.
Okay, thanks. Dr. Foreman.
Yeah, my question, you described very well why you did the second procedure. However, it wasn't documented in your notes. If all you had to do was put in why you wanted to do that for second procedure in documentation for the future, because you're looking at an x-ray is one thing, documenting why you did the surgery was not in your note. Okay, it was in the x-ray.
If you look at the op report for the procedure, was that not documented for the indication for the procedure?
It was documented in the op report, not preoperatively. You're supposed to document why you're doing the procedure.
I dictated the indication for the surgery in the op report. That's clearly enough, right? I dictated the indication, right? So your statement is, you first started off and said you clearly
dictate, you clearly stated the indication. Is that what I just said in my statement or in my notes?
In your statement to us about 15 minutes ago, you okay. clearly explained why you didn't have the program. So what I'm saying is that instead, you know, you explained
you don't see in the notes of why we proceeded with the second surgery. He had pain in the lateral gutter. And then I clearly stated an indication for the surgery in the op report that I did what I did. For what reason?
Okay.
I would look at the notes and I would show clearly that I did state the indication for the surgery. Okay. And in the op reports. Are you seeing that?
I don't see it clearly as you say it is, but I mean,
So what does it say in the notes? Is this a statement based off of Dr. Saunders saying it, or is it you're clearly seeing it as well?
Pardon me, gentlemen, this is not the venue for the doctor to be asking questions of the board member. But I see where we're going with this. We may not feel that, and I am in agreement that the documentation is not up to snuff with the training level of this physician, but we also have out there where standards that are called minimal standards, and it may not be up to your personal standard, but it is still considered it's minimal, even though it's not optimal. I do appreciate Dr. Neiman's explanations. I was curious about the use of the jig and your templates for determining surgery. That was one of my questions that I had. You already answered it. And I do agree that this patient had a lot of issues here with, you know, when you get a case that's that difficult, I mean, people expect magic and for things to be, you know, all better, and it's not going to be the case here. But I'm going to move to another context of your documentation is your consent. Now, I read through all the hospital consents that we were sent in addition, and just remind everyone that when you receive a complaint, that means all records. And when you've done surgery, that includes a consent, and that shouldn't have to be chased down. But I see in the consent from the hospital that this is a language.
Can I make a comment
on
that?
Pardon me? No, not yet. Let me finish, please.
Okay.
I see in your hospital consent, it's only written in medical terms. And it should be included that there's lay language after that. Because, you know, the patient is not going to know what a gastroc resection is. You need to explain in lay terms what that procedure is. Also, the hospital consents, these are the statements it made. I'm satisfied with the explanation of the risks associated with the procedure and have no further questions about them. I have also been informed and understand the potential risk of not undergoing the recommended surgery. The other statement is alternative treatments have been discussed with me. Nowhere is this documented in your progress notes, in your office medical records. And I would think with the procedure that's being performed that you would have diagrams of showing the patient what's going to be done, because I believe, as Dr. Saunders mentioned, those medical records obviously are you know, a good defense for the physician. And when you don't have those items in there, you're not presenting yourself well as far as how you're documenting what you're going to do. You can say you've done it, but if it's not documented, you know, people can assume you didn't do it. So that's my, you know, that's to me is a big concern, because in your progress notes, you should list those alternatives. You should list those risk complications of this particular surgery. Now, I did look to it. They have a lot of other consents the patient signed. There's one for the opioid. Well, that gives all the risks and side effects. So why isn't it there for the surgical procedure? So if you'd like to address that, Please do.
First point. Dr. Saunders clearly stated that the patient had prior discussion with other surgeons about alternatives to an ankle replacement. I don't say just because a patient wants an ankle replacement that they're going to get one. There's indications, there's contraindications, right? Those things were discussed many a times with this patient, right? I don't take a total ankle lightly, right? This patient agreed to have surgery based on our discussions, and our discussions don't clearly state what a gastrocnemius recession is, but patient didn't have complications from the gastroc recession. Patient didn't have complications from the ankle replacement. He continued to have pain and discomfort. The indication, the consent for the surgery is appropriate and adequate in the standard of care within the community of Arizona and nationwide. These are standard consents, right? And when I go over with the patient, I'll sometimes show them a model of the ankle replacement that's sitting in my office. I give them a pamphlet, a brochure. I go through x-rays with them, okay? When I say all risk and complications, expected outcomes, alternative benefits were discussed with the patient, they are discussed with the patient. If you want a list of things, including RSD, CRPS, you know, I think that's not what we're doing in the community. And to describe a gastrocnemius recession, that is what it says. That's what the statement is, a total ankle replacement with implants. I don't know how which better way to explain it. I've seen a lot of records. I review a lot of records at a lot of facilities. This is the standard of care. We clearly state what the procedure is, and that was, and not anything other, okay? As for your last comment of documentation, minimal documentation, maximum documentation, I still feel my documentation is adequate and meets the standard of care. You may feel it's cut and paste, but it basically, when a patient comes in and there's the same findings, I'm not gonna obstruct from those, I'm not gonna deviate from the findings. The concern here is not consent. The patient consented and got what he got because he wanted it. And clearly, you know, the indications, the op reports, you know, all these things I feel are very much above the standard of care.
Dr. Deming, can you define informed consent?
Excuse me?
Can you define informed consent?
I sure can.
What would you please do that? We'd like to hear your what you think informed consent means.
An informed consent is knowing the patient has a clear understanding of what's happening outside of what a doctor could discuss with a patient to patient, outside what a doctor to doctor would say, helping the patient understand from incision to closure to postoperative care, expected outcome, alternative benefits, knowing what procedures are, understanding how they're going to proceed, knowing that this patient has a clear understanding of what's going to proceed. Would you like to add to that, or is that?
No, that's fine. But and you know, we don't have the privilege of. You don't need school, man. I do know what informed consent is. We don't have the privilege because of this situation. We don't have the privilege of, because this was a board-generated issue because of the malpractice case. That's the way things are done here. So we don't have the privilege of asking the patient. Let me remind you of what there are the administrative code, the rules that are there in the practice of podiatry in the state. And this is under general provisions, R425-101. Number 14, informed consent means a document signed by a patient or a patient's representative that authorizes the treatment to the patient after the treating podiatrist informs the patient or the patient's representative of the following. A, description of the treatment. B, description of the expected benefits of the treatment. Alternatives to the treatment is C, D, associated risks of the treatment, including potential side effects and complications, and E, the patient's right to withdraw authorization for the treatment at any time. And that is the minimum standard. And as again it said, it has to be done by the treating podiatrist. Also, this goes along with state statute under the heading of unprofessional conduct. It could go 32-854.01, number 9 reads, failing to obtain written informed consent from a patient before the licensee performs any surgical procedure to the patient. So you may feel that that's adequate at the hospital record to say this, but in your own chart in the office, you need to have something that indicates that this was clearly done. Like I said, you can say it's done, but if it's not, meeting minimal standard again.
In my record, it clearly says at the bottom, I advise patient of all risks and complications, especially there's a clear statement at the bottom of my pre-op note. There's a clear statement on the bottom of my record that clearly states that. There's no law that requires I have to put a consent together in the office. I have to obtain consent, and the standard of care is the hospital consent, okay? The hospital is allowing this patient to proceed with a surgery in their facility. I am doing the surgery. The hospital consent is above and beyond the standard of care. I clearly stated in my record what an informed consent says. It is very well stated in there.
Dr. Ilano, do you have any questions again?
Yes, Do you see those statements?
This is a professional setting, Dr. Neiman. This is a professional setting. In order to keep the record clear, we need to not speak over each other. The board has been very careful to let you have your time, so let the board have its time.
I thought it was my form, I can barely hear Dr. Crawford.
Dr. Ilano, you were going to ask some questions?
I didn't see the patient get full consent for the surgery. Signed consent, and Dr. Neiman can say he went all over this, but it's not documented on his record.
Agreed. Dr. Foreman, do you have...
I have no other questions.
Okay.
May I?
I have one other board member. I need to ask her if she has any questions.
No questions.
Okay, doctor, please.
You do not see that clear statement in my records because I know it's there.
Well, let's take a 5-minute break and we'll go back in through and look. You say this is on your pre-op paperwork? Okay.
99% of the surgeries I do, I put it on my pre-op note.
Okay. We're going to take a 5-minute break. It is 8:45, and we will be back on record at 8:50. Did you make note of that?